right, decisions. That's right. And you can't wait for a cure. You got to get out there and do something, all right? Now, I was listening to something that was kind of disturbing a little earlier. And I'll just say that I was listening to it. But, you know, people don't want to face up to the fact that fascism is here. And that there are fascists. There's a fascist running the government, okay? And so I thought I'd read something. I'd start off the show today because that's going to be a lot of the theme. And I thought I'd start off the show today with something from Linda Ronstadt on Trump and Hitler, okay? Linda Ronstadt was asked by Anderson Cooper on CNN whether she saw parallels between Germany in the 1930s, the Weimar Republic, and today. And she said, well, great parallels. I mean, the intelligentsia of Berlin and the literati and all the artists were just busy doing their thing. And there were a lot of chances, as Hitler rose to power, there were a lot of chances to stop him, and they didn't speak out. And the industrial complex thought that they could control him once they got him in office. And of course, he was not controllable. And by the time he got established, he put his own people in place, and he stacked the courts and did what he had to do to consolidate his power. If you read the history, let's say that again, if you read the history, and I'll add, if you read it honestly, you won't be surprised. It's exactly the same. You find a common enemy for everybody to hate. When I was sure that Trump was going to get elected the day he announced, and I said, it's going to be like Hitler, and the Mexicans are the new Jews, and sure, they certainly have happened. And that was Linda Ronstadt, and I think people ought to consider that when you hear fools saying that this is not fascism, that fascism is not coming in. That's people just refusing to look at reality. All right, and settling for what, in fact, is a fascist in the White House and what, in fact, is being set up and established for us, all right? And if you just look at what's been going on in the last couple of weeks, if you didn't get cold on your insides, there's something wrong, all right? So we're going to talk about all of that today, and I'm really pleased to. I'm sitting here and I'm looking at these two guys because they are the people who are going to be talking with me about this to a large degree, and I'm really pleased to be welcoming them. It's David Zeiger, filmmaker. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Bo Logan, member of the Los Angeles Revolution Club and Iraq War veteran and resistor. All right, Bo, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Sure. Now, you got to get a little closer to the mic.
All right, there we go. How's
okay, that? There you go. He's sitting back at that. And I also want to say at the back end of the show, we're going to be continuing this whole theme, and we're going to be talking with Coco Das, a member of the editorial board of RefuseFascism.org, which has recently launched the hashtag OutNow movement, and we'll talk about the hashtag OutNow protests throughout January, all right? So that's what we're going on. But as I'm going to introduce my first guest here today, with something that he actually requested. And I don't want to have any blame for this because, and I'll just say, it fits him, okay? Teddy, can we try that little piece up there now?
Well now, let's take it from the top, grab some wheels. Well along and talk about some cuckoo deals. Now you're on my wavelength, and I'm reading you just fine. Don't cut out of here till we get on cloud nine. I've got smog in my noggin ever since you made the scene. Dad, I'm the saddest, like I'm green.
All right, all right. I just can't take any more of that. Kooky, kooky, lend me your comb.
Well, I asked for that because two giants of film and television passed away or died this last, actually yesterday. One was Buck Henry, who wrote The Graduate and a lot of other great satires of the era. And the other was Ed Kooky Burns, who made his fame as on the show 77 Sunset Strip, which was early 60s, and he was the depiction of a kind of a hip guy. And he still had his hair.
Yeah, you know, and that's what he played on for the rest of his life.
Yes. Yeah.
His hair, okay, and his comb, okay?
Yeah. All right. You got to grab onto something.
And actually, so people know this, that the song that was being played, that was actually both Ed Burns and Connie Stevens.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a big hit.
Yeah. I remember when I was like 7.
Yeah, well.
All right. Well, let's jump in this because it's we can laugh, we can hang out and all this other stuff, but there's actually some very serious stuff going on. And as I said at the beginning of it, people who are denying it are doing are actually enabling a lot of the horror that's happening in the world right now. And I wanted to, as I said, we'll be talking with Coco Das. And before that, we'll be talking with Bo Logan, who is sitting here with us now. Bo, hi.
Hey.
And we'll have you back on as soon as we get into this. I'm going to have both of you speak a little bit, and then we'll have it sort of back and forth, all right? So, Dave, let's look at this. You weren't in the military, but you played a significant role in fighting against it. And, you know, a lot of people, it's interesting because people don't understand what it was like at that point, you know. And you were someone who actually, you know, I remember when I first met you, I was really impressed with the fact that what you had dedicated your life to actually screwing up the military. Right? So, and that's important, you know, because this was in the middle of Vietnam and it involved organizing soldiers to fight against the military and not the enemy. Let's talk about that.
Well, I went in spring of 1970. I went down to Killeen, Texas. I was 20 years old. And joined up with the folks that were running a coffee house just outside Fort Hood that was essentially a subversive coffee house that helped GIs organize against the war and against racism in the military and a raft of other things. And this was when there was a widespread movement inside the military that ran alongside the movement that was going on in society as a whole. And it involved thousands of GIs. Hundreds of GIs went to prison or were in exile. It was a complex but an incredibly inspiring situation when people in society who were probably in the least position to take independent action of anyone because they were in the military, which essentially is organized as a fascist organization, were stepping outside of those bounds and were defying it, and literally in their tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands in the course of that war, they did that. They put out newspapers. They demonstrated. They refused to go to Vietnam. There were massive desertions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the point, and I was thinking about this, you know, especially kind of in the context in relation to today and what's gone on this week, what drove people to act was not just self-interest. It wasn't just, you know, I don't want to get killed or I don't want to, you know, but it was the massive immorality of the war. And people interpreted that in very different ways, you know, all the way from, well, this is a terrible mistake that honorable people have made by getting us into this, to understanding that this was American imperialism making its claim on that part of the world. But what really came through and what drove people into the streets and to take very courageous action was understanding how immoral and how vicious this war was on the Vietnamese people. And that kind of came through everywhere. And what was kind of making me thinking about this is what's been going on with, you know, and how the war in Iraq has been depicted and has been extended, and especially this, you know, this obsession that comes from Trump in particular, but is widespread, which is, quote, American lives, end quote, and that the rationale for anything the United States does in Iraq and in relation to Iran is to protect American lives, which one columnist in the New York Times pointed out yesterday, the American lives that are in danger are there because the United States has invaded and occupied and conducted a long war in that part of the world. And when in the early days of the Iraq War, when there was a beginning movement of veterans and soldiers against that war, similar to and inspired by the GI movement during the 70s, that was coming through. You know, this kind of segues into, I guess, in 2008, which was now how many years ago? Almost 12 years ago. Iraq veterans organized a Winter Soldier investigation to testify about what that war was all about. And that was inspired by the Vietnam vets who had done the same thing. And what comes through in that investigation and what was driving folks back then, again, was what the United States was doing to Iraq, how that country was being destroyed. And one of the guys who testified at that made the point that until the people in the United States understand the devastation that this country has wrought over there, that nothing will ever be done about it. And it will go on and on and on. Talk about prescient. I mean, this was in 2008, and this has continued. And the reality of what the United States has done to these countries has been pretty much wiped out of the conversation.
Mm-hmm. All right. This is the Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate. We're talking with filmmaker Dave Zeiger and Iraq War veteran and member of the Los Angeles Revolution Club, Bo Logan.
You know, one thing I wanted to ask you, though, before we get into a lot of that, I wanted to ask you this, because you spoke to it, but there's, you know, part of what got me, I mean, I was thinking about this when I was just, you know, reading up and trying to figure out, okay, what are we going to talk about? How are we going to talk about this? Because it's such a massive thing. And it's also, it's something that actually, I think everybody who's our age, that would be like 12, right? Basically, you know, those people actually had an understanding of something that I think was really important. And I remember one of the things that had the biggest impact on me was Dewey Canyon, what was it, 3 or something like that?
Right,
yeah.
Dewey Canyon 3.
Which, you know, I don't know, Bo, if you know about that. Are you aware of
it? I've heard of it.
Yeah, and well, it was very heavy because what happened was all these soldiers, all these people who got up there, and I remember watching this, throwing their medals, you know, and saying that they're never going to fight for this system again, they're never going to fight for this country, that the next time they fight, it'll be take the steps of the White House. You know, and it was really something that posed something I thought that was very, very essential for people. One, the recognition that what had been done was a war crime against the Vietnamese people and others in that mm-hmm. part of the world. But also, it tied in with what was happening to black people. It tied into, you know, this whole thing of the certain morality that people actually took up and held proudly and use that to actually make their way through the world at that point. I mean, it really did change things. I thought that was something, and I know in you know, you have a scene from that in your mm-hmm. you know, yeah. in your film, but it's very, very moving and very heavy when you see these guys. My cousin was actually you know, he was a sad story because he was part of that. He was actually one of the people that was arrested and put on trial and all this for this big thing, and he ended up, you know, he had Agent Orange all through his body, and he ended up going crazy and just wandering around the world looking for some place to give him some kind of cure, and he never found it, died somewhere in a homeless place somewhere. But, you know, you're looking at what the horrendous character of what was being done in the name of people here, you know, and it was right that it was being done in the name of America because that's what America has done from the very beginning. But it also, what people did had a big difference on how the movement developed, how people began to think, how people looked at what the U.S. was doing, and how they looked at fighting against it. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You said it very well. It's, I don't know. It's hard to kind of reconstruct that sense that existed then, because it's so much of it's been subsumed today into a whole lot of other things. But the sight of not only veterans but soldiers, active duty soldiers from the Vietnam War, defying this country, defying what this country was doing, yeah, it had a tremendous influence on everyone outside of the military. And by the way, at that time, just to kind of go back there again, at that time you can go back and look at newspapers, and everyone knew what was happening. Everyone knew that veterans, you know, were almost damn near storming the White House, and that soldiers were refusing to fight, that soldiers were demonstrating and whatever. That was well known at the time. But one of the things, to kind of bring this back up to today and to fascism, starting in the actually late 1970s, the right-wing organizations, veterans organizations, the Ronald Reagan campaign, all of these kind of coalition of right-wing forces at the time, one of the main things that they were set out to do was to completely bury that reality and replace it with the whole mythology about how the American soldiers were betrayed by the American people, that young women were spitting on soldiers as they returned. And they were very successful at pretty much wiping out from the American consciousness what had actually happened during the war. And by the way, that's very reminiscent of what one of the things that that the Nazi Party did, that Hitler did following World War One, was to blame the German people, particularly women, for the fact that that Germany lost the war, and accusing, you know, women of spitting on their returning soldiers and all. It was very, you know, from what Lynn Rounce said, you can go back and read that history, and it's almost exactly the history of the 1970s and 80s in this country. And it lays the groundwork for going at it again. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I just got word that we have a clip that you brought with you. Is it a...
Oh, did it work?
Yeah. Should we play that now and then...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, play right. that. I think All it's right. important.
All right. Go ahead, Teddy. Let's play that clip.
I just want to say that I am sorry for the hate and destruction that I have inflicted on innocent people, and that this is happening, and that until people hear about what is going on with this war, it will continue to happen and people will continue to die. I'm sorry for the things that I did. I am no longer the monster that I once was. Thank you.
All right, Dave, let's talk about that. It's very heavy. Yeah.
That was John Turner, who at the Iraq Veterans Against the War Winter Soldier investigation in 2008. There was a lot of things, you know, testified about in terms of the kind of casual killing of civilians, the racism that was promoted by the military, and all these things. But what John said at that moment, to me, concentrated what the real central issue here is, and that is what's done to these countries in the name of American interests, in the name of protecting American lives, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And without focusing on that, you really can't understand what's going on in the world right now. You can't understand why the Iranian people and the Iraqi people hate America. Mm-hmm. You know?
What you're saying really brings things to a certain head, and there's somebody sitting across from you, Bo Logan, who actually, you know, you are very active in standing up against the, you know, what the U.S. military is doing now, but you also came out of that in a way that I think is pretty unique. So I'd like you to talk about that. You know, you're standing up and you're doing full force out there against the war crimes that are being committed against people all over the world by this system. But you also served in the military, and you did twice, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that a little.
Yeah. I mean, my track record was, you know, I was part of the invasion in 2003 with Marines. And then I got out, and I thought that actually America had, like, morally let down the people of Iraq by not sticking around enough to, like, mop up the mess we had created. So actually I went back into the Army in 2007 as part of the surge. So while this Winter Soldier hearing is occurring, I'm part of this force that's getting ready to go over there and basically make, you know, life miserable for the people of Iraq, you know, once again. And I actually remember, like, during this time, I didn't realize, you know, like, it was like, in 2003, it was like the largest demonstration of up to that point against the Iraq War. I had no idea that that was going on. I had no idea that these Winter Soldier hearings were going on. All I ever heard was, why has it got to be you going over there? You know, like, you know, again, this is like self-interest. And that's easy to dismiss, because then, you know, you go, well, you know, then you can actually play like a moral high ground. You can say, well, you know, I should have to suffer just like anybody else. But no one was saying, what are you doing to these people in Iraq? And it was somewhere around the end of my last deployment over there. There was this guy who, you know, he wasn't some soft liberal or anything in our platoon, but he kind of like laid it out to me. We would go around and, you know, we'd do these night raids where we basically just, you know, make life, like I said, miserable for these people in these areas. And we're kind of going like, why do we do this? This just almost seems to be just like training exercises. This one guy points out, I go in there, and if this guy's got an AK, I got to mess him up. You know what I mean? Because he's got an AK. Well, why is he got an AK? He's got an AK because when we leave, some local insurgent group is going to come and tell him, you got to hold materials for me. And his only way of fending off the local insurgent group is with that AK. But then it's like this catch-22. But then here the U.S. comes through, and we're not like saying, okay, we understand. We're like, nah, we're going to mess you up for this. And that's when like the logic of it, like finally clicked. I was like, we're not doing anything good for these people over here. It took me a while to kind of like work through like what was the U.S. strategy over there. I mean, it was just that. It was like, you either bow down to us or we make life miserable for you. And then, I mean, as I started just reevaluating everything we had done over there. And so when I got out, you know, look, you know, I'm actually very ashamed that at that moment I didn't have the courage to go, I won't be part of this. But when I did get out, I started looking into this more. And I started realizing it wasn't what a lot of people say. It's just, you know, some greedy folks trying to, you know, like, you know, stock markets for Halliburton and everything, just trying to go up war profiteers. No, this is the U.S. dominating a whole region. And if that region won't bow down to you, it's like scorched earth policy. You know, well, you know, what is it? Burn the village to save, but not even trying to save the village. Burn the village because the village won't bow down to you. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. And so luckily I was able to actually get with, I'm actually very glad that I ran into supporters of the Revolutionary Communist Party who actually were able to really break down how this whole system is what's the driving force behind that. And I think people need to dig into that. People need this science so they can understand, so they won't continue to get fooled. And that's how we end up having.
All right, this is the Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate. We're talking with filmmaker Dave Zeiger and Iraq War veteran and member of the Los Angeles Revolution Club, Bo Logan. I want to actually, you know, some of the stuff that you were saying is, I kept remembering, I remember talking to you at one point where, you know, this thing of, because it wasn't just sort of a moral question. It was actually, there was a reality there, like you were talking about. You had a gun and you used that gun and you know, and you were with a whole bunch of people that were waging a war. You know, and that's what people do when they're waging a war. But you actually had to, it's very powerful when you talk about changing sides, because that's actually what you did. You know, and you think about that in terms of how many people don't change those sides. And I want to know, explore a little bit more, what was it? Because it's one thing, yes, okay, to hear it from people talking to you about it, but the visceral aspect of sort of what you were starting to get into, where you just sit back and you start to think, holy, what the hell, man, what is going on here? And you start to look at this, and it does have to disorient people, but then you actually reach for a way to get oriented about what's really going on. Can we talk about that a little? I don't know if that's clear enough. But.
I mean, my whole process of, I was pissed off. So, like, I mean, it's actually, there's something beautiful about, you know, the world's all messed up. You go out to a protest, and you're not just screaming at the sky. You actually are getting involved with, you know, trying to figure out what the problem is and look for the solution. And this is where I actually ran into this quote by Smedley Butler, who said, you know, he's, I don't know if people know the history, he's this famed Marine commandant, you know, they actually like use it as part of the, you know, indoctrination to get you to like think the Marine Corps is something good. You know, they really uphold this guy. But when he got out, he made some say, like, I thought I was fighting for democracy around the world. Turns out I was fighting for the Dole Corporation, because this is during, like, the Banana Wars and stuff like that. And, like, yeah, there was something, too. Like, it clicked. It's like, oh, well, here's this guy that I was told to revere, you know, and he's, like, laying out some truth. Maybe I should listen to this a little bit. And this caused me to dig some more and more. I mean, I think this was actually why my eyes opened up. Like I said, when I was in Iraq, was this one guy in my platoon who, like I said, he wasn't a liberal. He was a pretty tough guy. But here he's like laying out that this is, you know, this is total BS, you know. So, yeah, you know, so I'd say my path to getting to where I'm at now was just like trying to hear whatever I could hear to, because it's like, there was no answer that made sense at that point. And then all of a sudden, I started to run into answers that made sense, that actually added up. And so that's where once I confronted the reality, and like once the answer actually matched with reality, then it's like, oh, okay, now I know what I need to do.
Yeah, and you know, granted, I mean, what you're saying is it's not easy to do that on one level, but at a certain point, you feel compelled to do it. you know, when you begin to see a little bit of the truth. And I wanted to ask you this, you know, how do you see the situation today? Because look, there's a lot of people, and it's not just when you look at what's been happening, and I'll ask you the same thing, Dave, but it's, you know, when you look at what's been happening recently, even the celebration of just annihilating whole groups of people. I mean, look at what's happening in the Middle East right now. You know, what's happening to Iran, what's happening in everywhere. I mean, it's basically all over the Middle East. You have this situation where the U.S. troops are actually being celebrated for what they're doing. And I wanted to talk to you about that because it's sort of like you're coming from a certain understanding, but then you see what's happening today. Let's talk about that.
One of the biggest breakthroughs, actually, when I think it really clicked for me, was I used to kind of like justify, well, I followed the rules of engagement and everything while I was over there, so everything I did was technically right. And someone challenged me. They go, but you were willing to go along with it. That ultimately means that you saw the people as Iraq as less important than you. And when someone challenged me on that, it's like that was a huge opening up for me. Like I could no longer pretend like I was just a pawn who had been like used in this. I actually had to confront that I had let myself, you know, be blinded. That I had, you know, whatever excuse they could bring to justify this, you know, that was how I could like wash my hands of it. And I think that's what a lot of people have got to confront right now in order to break from this idea that somehow those troops that are over there are doing some good. Because, yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of people who get like channeled into the military because of economic reasons. And I mean, it's just one of the many ways you call out how disgusting America's whole system is, that that's the only option they give to people in poverty is go kill people around the world that are in messed up situations just like them. But the way we have to challenge this, though, isn't that people are getting duped into this. We got to challenge this as what are you actually being part of? And are you willing to sell your morality away in order to just worry about yourself? You know, because I think once you challenge people on that, then you can break away from this idea that, well, we've got to get behind it because those people over there, you know, the troops over there, they're like, there are people, you know, it's like, no, the people of the world are our people, not just the people here.
Mm-hmm. It's a very important point. And actually, someone was just saying to me this thing, this point is, which I want people to speak to a little bit on this because, you know, this point he just wrote, which was saying, it's not just the fascists. These days, it's hard to get an anti-war protest without hearing people, normal everyday people who are part of the protest saying, thank you for your service, you know, without even thinking about what the hell the service is. Dave, go ahead.
Yeah, that's a huge thing right now. I mean, I'm a baseball fan, and I go to the Dodger games a lot, and every game they have a honor the hero moment where they bring someone out, you know, from all the way from World War II vets to mostly vets from Iraq and Afghanistan, and you know, and people just go crazy, you know, cheering for them, and it's kind of in this. Goes back to how the reality of the Vietnam War and how soldiers and veterans broke out and opposed that war and took that stand that you're talking about, Bo, that not only that this war is wrong, but this war is criminal, and here's why, and, you know, thousands and thousands joined the anti-war movement. That was so powerful and so dangerous that in the decades since, you know, this whole idea that honor the soldier even if you oppose the war, and the reason you have to do that is because during the Vietnam War, the anti-war movement, you know, spit on soldiers and denigrated them, all of which is just simply a myth. And it's a myth designed to bury the idea of soldiers and veterans standing with the people against these wars. And it's something that really has to be, you know, confronted. But it's this very powerful thing that has been, you know, put out there and is constantly put out there and pounded over people's heads. And people have bought it to a large degree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Bo, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
I did want to add, the other day, someone who was a member of Vietnam Veterans Against the War said that, like, someone asked him, like, well, you know, like, y'all called them baby killers and stuff. And he said, actually, they took up the line, well, if you were a baby killer, that's what you should be called out for being, you know? So, like, there's a lot of this, like, dancing around, like, we can't call them murderers. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't, you know, like, it's like, well, what were you doing over there? You know what I mean? And so, they'll say, if the shoe fits, you know what I mean? Like, you're a criminal. You're part of this military. You're over there. You're engaged in crimes against humanity. And so let's call them out for what they are. And let's have other veterans come out, because, you know, you sold your morality away by being part of this. Well, the die isn't cast. You know, you can actually get on the right side of history now by speaking out against this, by, like, breaking with this veneer that's holding so many people back.
Yeah, I think that's really important. In fact, that's one of the things I wanted to sort of lead into, because there is this question of, you know, how you see the situation today, the stakes in it, and why is it, you know, how dangerous is it? Because, I mean, look, people are looking at this and they're thinking, you know, as Dave was saying, but, you know, these are people that are talking about, oh, we should honor the veterans, even if you didn't, you know, no matter what, they're over there, they're doing this, they're actually serving for you, they're doing this for you. And, you know, and you're sitting there, and so many millions of people eat that up, mm-hmm. you know, because that's the thing is, yes, the U.S. military is good. You know, it's never, and people will argue, and it's ironic today because they'll argue, we're not Germany. We're not, you know, this isn't Hitler's army. Well, yeah, it is. You know, let's talk about that a little bit, because I think that's important for people to get a handle on. It's not easy, I think, for people to actually say, step back and say, and everything you guys have been saying, for people to step back and say, okay, well, what is it? What should, how do I look at this? And then what the hell should we do in the face of this? People that actually understand this. Let's talk about that a little.
What people, this is one of the things about that I grapple with a lot about, you know, Germany and here and all of that. Is, I guess it's kind of the banality of evil, how people can be led into committing horrendous acts from simply, you know, their so-called duty, carrying out their duty, you know, following orders or whatever. You know, there was an example of during the, you can actually look at the example. I mean, I know it's not the same as the military, but the Border Patrol. Border Patrol is essentially a military organization. And, you know, you're hearing more and more just horrendous crimes being committed by people in the Border Patrol because they're doing what they've been ordered to do, because they're carrying that out. Maybe that brings it a little bit more closer to home. But it can be carried further and further and further. And certainly in Iraq, during the time you were there, I don't know, when was the siege of Fallujah? There were massive crimes committed, you know, similar to Vietnam. And the majority of these crimes have been suppressed by the military. And you can see how this can simply go over step by step by step by step into death camps. In Germany, and when the Gestapo and Hitler decided to, for the final solution, to actually implement that, there was a meeting at the Swansea Conference, right, where all these other, you know, leaders of the various arenas of the military were met. Every one of them was appalled initially at what was being presented. But by the end of the conference, they all went along and they did it. So it's just, you know, this is the idea that, no, that those kind of things can't happen here. You can see them in utero, you know, in Iraq, right? And in the border, at the border, and what's going on there.
Oh, you know, one of the things that actually hits me hard is that it's not just, you know, we can talk about what people are doing, but there's actually, it's not just sort of how we see the situation today. You know, it's actually, there's something that's at stake here. And it's really important. I think you're starting to hit at it, Dave. You're hitting at it. I think you were starting to hit at it. And there's something I want to talk to, and we have just a few minutes left here. But, you know, this basic point of, look, people today, what are we going to say to people today? Because what's going on is not just sort of out there and we have to speak to it in the sort of, you know, just sort of in the ozone, and just we put out our thought, what we think. We have to actually, it seems we have to really fight with people to understand the truth behind what's going on, what's being done, and what's being done. Not, it's, you know, look, it's one thing to say, yes, it's what's being done in our name. But it's also, it's another thing to recognize, just plain, flat out, what's being done to people today. You know, so what would you say? What would you say to people in the military, for instance? What would you say to people today? What would you pose to people in terms of people that are thinking about joining, or people that are carrying out this horrendous stuff that's going on now? That actually, you know, you have, it's true. You have a cheering section over here. Our people are going over and they're fighting all those rotten people. Even if it's Trump, you know, you have a hell of a lot of people who are not willing to go against Trump on this front. You know, and it's a very dangerous, and not just dangerous in terms of, oh, this could hurt the U.S., but it's dangerous in terms of what it poses for all of humanity.
Yeah, I mean, yes, that's it. You got to you need to think about the people of the world. Stop thinking about yourself. Look, the reason, I mean, we can get into a whole analysis of how people's thinking gets shaped by this system, and that leads to thinking about, I got to look out for myself and everything. But real quickly, what people have got to know is, you're going to be part of carrying out horrible crime. Not, this is above the level of calling it crime. This is genocide against the people of Iran. It's what you're going to be part of if you're going along with this military right now. And this whole idea that Trump stepped back, you know, that, like, you know, ooh, he's being a little more reasonable. Or whatever. These sanctions are how they weaken the people of Iran, so that they can go in there and then they can annihilate them. This is what Clinton did in the 90s, led to the death of over 500,000 people in Iraq because of those sanctions. And then the U.S. went under Bush and, like, this basically, like, this is like taking it to the final solution, just wiping out millions. Speak about Fallujah, where they wrapped that town in concertina wire and then shelled it with white phosphorus. And, I mean, people in the town of Fallujah still are being born with birth defects because of all the depleted uranium that America pumped into that city. So that's what you're going to be part of if you're part of this military. And you can't say, well, I'm not on the front line, so I'm not actively pulling the trigger. No, you're going to be supported. They have to have support in order for these frontline troops to be able to get out there. They need logistics. It's something like you need 9 support for every trigger puller. So you are going along with it. This is like saying, oh, all I did was bring the uniforms to the death camps. I didn't actually take people to the gas chamber. All I did was cook food for them. No, you are being part of this instrument for death if you're part of this military, if you're joining up into it.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think on that note, unless, do you have something else you want to add?
I think Bo said it. Very clearly.
Exactly. Yeah. So on that note, I want to thank each of you for joining today. Bo, David, thank you very much for joining us. And we're going to take a quick break and be right back. So stay tuned.
So I said, students like to be a flea. On the collar man, I wouldn't like to be a flea. On the your collar. Oh.
All right, welcome back. That was Downpresser Man by Peter Tosh. You know, basically, we've been talking about all this stuff that's been going on, and it's not just what's going on, but there's actually a need to and a necessity to and a possibility and to go out and for people to go out and fight against this, to stop this, all right? And here to join us and talk about this is someone who's basically has dedicated her life at this point to actually standing up and exposing what's going on and wrestling with people about what they have to do. And I'm very, very pleased to welcome to the show Coco Das. Coco, welcome back.
Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Good to be here.
Yeah. Well, let's jump into this. You know, this is, as I don't know if you heard my previous two guests, but,
yeah,
you know, this whole situation, this is a horrendous and, you know, not just inhuman, but, you know, just, I mean, it is really people who want to do this game of, you know, sort of sitting back and saying, well, it's not really going to be fascism. I actually need to really take a look at what the hell is happening. And I think you have a very good understanding of that. So let's talk about this. There's, you know, there is a possibility. There's a need to actually do something that's more than just sort of, I mean, there's a need for demonstrations, but there's a need for people to be recognizing what's happening at the same time and to take things in a certain direction. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So I think it's important to understand that this new escalation of aggression against Iran is a part of the fascist program of the Trump-Pence regime. You know, it is part of the America First, Make America Great Again. It's their vision of it. And there's your guests were talking about the history of imperialist aggressions against Iraq, against Vietnam. But there are some things that people need to recognize as different in this situation. One, we do have a fascist regime at the head of the most powerful country in the world with, you know, itchy finger on the nuclear trigger. Trump has said that if, you know, why can't we use nuclear weapons if we have them? And then there was the assassination of Soleimani, which is a huge breaking of international norms and international law. This is, you know, a very high-ranking state official in Iran that was assassinated in Iraq. So, you know, Trump actually likes to talk about how sovereignty needs to be respected when it comes to the U.S. and his vision of America first. But, you know, this is a leader of a sovereign state, and Andy Z made this point on our webinar last week, that, and not only was this leader of a sovereign state assassinated, but was assassinated within the borders of another sovereign state. And we're in a moment right now with impeachment and with these escalations, threats against Iran, where there's a lot of danger, a lot of volatility, but also a lot of people, again, waking up to the horrors of this regime and in the need for resistance. And there's been righteous resistance against these war moves, and, you know, these are going to continue. But it's very important to link and see the whole picture. And when people go out to stop this war against Iran that could be looming, that all the other things that have been normalized and accommodated, that people have accepted. I mean, this is the reality. Over a period of 2 years, until really this last fall when impeachment started roiling up with the Ukraine scandal, there has been a process of normalization of acceptance. People accepted things that back in 2016, they never thought they would accept. They've accepted tens of thousands of immigrants in concentration camps. They've accepted that Roe v. Wade could possibly be overturned. They've accepted just, you know, blatant lying and tearing up of norms and calling, you know, political rivals all kinds of, you know, just calling, just ratcheting up really like violent rhetoric. They've accepted white supremacist killings that have been emboldened by this regime. So it's really important as people come out and lift their sights to stopping this war, that we actually stopped the whole program. And the only way to do that is to demand that this whole regime get out now. That's what the hashtag out now is about, this movement. And maybe we can talk more about that.
This is the Michael Slate Show, and we're talking with Coco Das, member of the editorial board of Refuse Fascism. Yeah, I want to, because actually I was just thinking about something that I think I read something you had written about this, but the point that impeachment without removal would have the fascist regime intact and full of vengeance and determination to drive forward its program. And in the unlikely scenario that the Senate votes to remove Trump, the Christian fascist wing of the regime led by Pence is basically, they're poised to take over and hammer in their own theocratic vision of society. And this is a point where people who are sort of like, well, you're being a little too dramatic when you talk about fascism. Oh, everybody talks about fascism now like it was some sort of, you know, toothpaste commercial or something. And it's sort of, there's a reality here of there is actually a fascist regime. It is in power, and it has to, and people have to recognize that and then determine what the hell they're going to do about it, because not enough people are dealing with actually what exists, but also, even more importantly, what they got to do in relation to that.
I think there's a couple of things there. One, yes, impeachment without removal. I mean, I've said this before, every crisis that the regime gets through makes them stronger, and then they go on to escalate what they've been trying to do. So now we have a situation where there are people in concentration camps where they did carry out an assassination of a foreign leader. So this is a crisis that if we allow them to get through, it is going to be a nightmare for humanity. I mean, everything, it's going to be much, much harder to stop them. But this is a moment to seize on where there's a lot of unpredictability. Nobody actually knows what the outcome of these recent events with Iran is going to be. Nobody actually knows. We don't even know at this point when the Senate trial is going to start. This is the moment to seize. There's a lot that's in flux right now, and it is important to seize the whole regime's fascist program as the basis for resistance and for our fight and to demand that the Trump-Pence regime go. Because if they get through this, imagine, I don't think it should be that hard to imagine what can happen if they actually do go to war with Iran. If, you know, the Supreme, if we decide that, you know, people are going to just wait till November and let the elections resolve this and Trump wins another term or he refuses to leave office. There's enough history where we know what this regime is capable of. And if we don't seize this moment with everybody actually thinking about what is our responsibility to stop this, what if the people in Germany had stood up before it was too late and actually drove out the Nazi regime? That's the moment we're in. And there are just two things that I want to point your listeners to. There's a statement on refusefascism.org. It's called, "Our actions, our daring, our determination could change the whole game. Impeachment, acts of war against Iran in this moment of conspicuous change, our actions, our daring, our determination could change the whole game." And I think it's really important for people to read this statement and also to look on the homepage of refusefascism.org, where we have a statement about what's needed in January as this impeachment battle roils at the top of society. There's a big fight at the top of society between a hollowed out Republican Party that's become thoroughly fascist and the Democrats who have a different vision of how to, you know, keep American imperialism going. But this is a moment for the people who have the interest of humanity at heart to become to really forge a mass movement from below that can actually break open a whole new future. Because if we stay on this course, if we stay on this trajectory, it's bad news for everybody. And that's an understatement.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And do you have any, what's happening around in the rest of the country? Can you tell people where they can go to find out information on that?
Yeah, if you go right to the homepage of refusefascism.org, actually one thing you can do is make a donation so that people can, there's a lot of things happening in January that we're trying to get people to, or you can, you know, get bunch of friends together, make some signs, have your own protest, write to us. But these are the cities and the locations and times are listed right at refusefascism.org.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything you'd like? We have about 2 minutes for you to say this, or 2.5 minutes for you to say something. Is there anything you want to leave people with? Because I've been thinking a lot about this of you know, look, we can't say in advance how much sharper the domestic and international contention will become, but we can't, nobody can actually talk about that, but we can actually argue for what needs to be done and on that, and really fight for that to happen. And that seems to me, as you know, I've been reading your stuff and I've been thinking, okay, there's a lot of heart in there and there's a lot of struggling with people around what needs to be done. And I think there's something we should leave with that kind of view. And I'd like you to just talk to that for a minute. You know, people need to know that it's exceptionally important that they don't just sit on their couch and click their tongues at what a shame it is.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that your previous guests were talking, speaking to this very eloquently, that, you know, there is a moral question of, you know, what kind of person are you going to be in this time when there is a regime in power that actually does pose an existential threat to the future of humanity and the planet? And what kind of world do we want to leave for you know, all the people that we love, for our kids? And also that the people of the world are our people. American chauvinism and this idea that American lives are more important than other people's lives, it's going to lead, you know, even good people down a very bad path where, you know, you become complicit in crimes against humanity. So I think that, you know, that's something that everyone needs to grapple with. And the resources are there. There's a lot of plans in January. I want to urge people to go to refusefascism.org. The Women's March is coming up. We want to send big organized contingents to them. There's on the 25th, there's a call for a global day of action against war against Iran. So there's a lot to plug into, but, you know, people really need to grapple with this question. So, you know, that's the question of where is your humanity, where's your morality, and what side are you on?
All right, Coco, we're going to have to jump out on that note, and I want to thank you very much for joining us, and I'm sure we'll be talking again very soon, okay?
Thanks, Michael.
All right, thank you. All right, I want to leave you with a quote here from Bob Avakian, all right? And it's on mass outrage and determined opposition. With the invasions and ongoing wars, the coups, the slaughter of civilians in the hundreds of thousands, the wrecking of countries, and the reducing of millions to desperation and starvation at the hands of the imperialists of the USA and their allies and craven puppets, where is the mass outrage and active and determined opposition from people in the USA, in whose names these monstrous crimes are continually committed, including where is it now? All right. So let us go out with that. And I'll be back again next week, I guess. I want to thank Teddy Robinson for being that magical man with basically making this all hearable. I want to thank all of our guests today, Bo Logan, Dave Zeiger, and Coco Das. I want to thank Henry Carson, my assistant producer, Jeff Pryor, my production assistant. I also want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in. If you want to, you can write to me at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. We're going to go out now with Here is the Rose by Outer National. Talk to you again next week.
If I'm listening, I want to hear your thoughts, see it all. Like a heated wave through the walls. You want to go out tonight. You want to know what it's like when the wind's in your lungs and the fire is in those eyes.
asleep, you're running fast down the street, your feet on the ground. Why don't you dance?